Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Food Friday, December 19th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back author, historian, educator, baker, crazy person, Amy Halloran. Amy loves flour. She loves baking. She loves the history of the bakeries and all the recipes from years past. We'll go into the past again with our friend Amy. You want to talk about baking and flour and grains and all sorts of stuff? Give us a call, 800-348-2551. It's our last Food Friday of the year, and I want to go out with a bang, and this is a great guest to do it, 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. What exactly are we going to talk about? Well, I don't know, but we'll find out after the news. Well, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is the one, the only Amy Halloran. Amy is a writer, an activist, a phenomenal baker, and she harbors a deep interest in the history of old bakeries in our region. She's always up to something. She's always reading something or thinking about something. So it's fun to check in with her. She's the author of The New Bread Basket. Always a favorite on this show. I'm not sure where we're going with this, but hang in there. And if you want to call, feel free. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran, happy holidays. Welcome back.
Ray, how did we get to the end of the year?
How? I know, it's crazy.
I remember when we put this date on the calendar and I was like, oh, we'll see that in 2030.
Yeah. Yeah,
and here it is. Here it is.
And if I seem especially morose today, it's because I was at the company holiday party.
Oh.
Oh, God. Oh, boy, I tell you what.
Every day another lament.
Yeah. You know, they say, come in, sit down. And I say, they made me. They made me sit. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It was fun. Everybody else was in a great mood. 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran, what have you been up to?
Oh, man. So I took a couple of trips to the Midwest over the fall, and that was really fun. I went to Madison, Wisconsin, to what's called a variety showcase.
Yeah.
Where chefs, farmers, plant breeders, and bakers, and millers, and advocates all get together and talk about new breeds of seeds.
Really?
New seed varieties. And show off. The chefs and bakers bake wonderful things. There was a variety.
Were you baking?
No, I was just eating and I just being delight, eating up company. I was so excited to see a number of people.
Do they all know you? Are you famous?
I'm flour famous, yes.
You are. So yes. Everyone just, oh, there's Amy Halloran.
And, but another flour famous person, a woman named Lola Mulholland, who's from Oregon, she made award-winning farm-to-school noodles that went into the Oregon public school system. She was there.
She made them and they went to the school system.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's really, and she also, I have to recommend for anybody still wondering what to buy people for Christmas, get Lola's book, Group Living and Other Recipes.
Group Living. So she's in a commune.
Ish. Not really.
Commune-ish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's as opposed to communist.
Oh, God, no. We don't have any of those.
Really?
But anyway.
Well, it's okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
Anyway, it was really great, and we saw Bickford wheat, which is a variety of wheat that has been bred specifically for artisan bakeries in the Midwest.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. And then I took a trip to Ann Arbor. I gave a talk on the evolution of American baking at Zingerman's Bakery. And I went to the special collections at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and looked at an incredible cookbooks. There's a woman there who's archived. It's called the Jan Bluestein Longoni Archives. Collected incredible stuff.
These are hard copies or microfiche or digitized?
Handled. They were, it was so
nothing like
neat.
That.
And it was just, you know, community cookbooks, a an 1873 fundraiser for the Boston YWCA.
Wow, cool.
I mean, it was just an all kinds of through the ages advertising, the stuff that I love to look at and never tire of looking at.
Aside from the nostalgia of it and the feeling you get from looking at these old things, are there things that you learn, new stuff? I mean, you know everything, right?
No, I don't know. I don't know hardly anything.
Oh, come on.
No. This is the thing. I learn so much each day when you look at old stuff, you know? So right now I'm looking at, it's not even really nostalgia. You know, I was thinking about, we should talk about nostalgia, because what is nostalgia? It's not just like burnishing your feelings about something.
Isn't it?
I don't know. There's some bigger appeal to having a connection to the past. And maybe it's about not understanding time. Like how we just talked about the accordion of the year. It squeezed us. It opened up. It squeezed us. And so what the heck? And that's why I love baking, Ray, I think.
Oh, my God. We're going to talk about the accordion of time today on this Food Friday. No, I'm into it. Amy Halloran is our guest today. That is, by the way, something that I often use. Time, when you get older, is like an accordion. Sometimes it goes very fast, and sometimes it gets pulled out, and everything is very slow. So I thought that was my original idea, but apparently not.
It's hitting us all.
Yeah.
The Gen Xers.
Now, tell me about the last time you were here, the last couple of times we talked about sort of your research into the history of bakeries, specifically in Troy, but in the region in general. And that is on hold now as you travel around and gallivant around?
Well, you know, some of the pamphlets were from bakeries or addressed to bakeries. I was looking at bakeries that exist because I'm always trying to think about it in context, okay? So we had lots of little bakeries before we got factory bread and factory cakes and
yeah,
stuff like that.
And presumably all across the country it was the same.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. You tell the story of bread in one place, it's generally the same. And so I was still looking at that and thinking about that, and I'm going to be thinking about it again next year. I got a grant to sit with the Hart Clewitt Museum at their archives all year and work on...
Does Kathy Sheehan ever get just go into another room? You know, Amy, we need some peace and quiet.
Kathy and I can rattle it off like the best of them.
She is phenomenal. She'll
be
on next
week,
too.
She is so good. I have to, you know, I was looking for one particular thing, and I said, Kathy, I thought I knew exactly where I was going. I told her what it was, where I thought it was, and she got me there.
Well, that's great. So this is a year-long thing that
yep.
you'll be doing. And so this is fun. So you know what you're up against. What can you learn that you haven't already? I mean, how much more is there to know about bakeries in Troy? Amy Halloran.
Okay, so how do bakeries fit in the history of Troy? How does Troy go downhill over the early 20th century? How does the world change? What's the reaction to Fryhoffers from all the little bakeries that happen?
Did that company subsume, I don't know if that's the right word, a lot of these little bakeries and bring them into the fold, or they just went out of business?
No. I think they went out of business, but maybe the Depression helped kick them over. I'd love to hear people's opinions about how the small bakery declined. It certainly got to do with the rise of the supermarket. Because when you think about grocery stores in, say, 1920, they didn't look anything like this. There's a restaurant on 15th Street in Troy, Alibaba, that used to be an IGA. A tiny little grocer.
I remember those IGAs all over the place.
And across the street was a tinier version of an IGA, you know, like I look at there's an incredible, have I told you about this before? Grossateria.com.
No.
Grossateria.com is one of the best bunny holes. And so he's a librarian in, I think, North Carolina. And he, for his hobby, so he's, you know, he's a librarian for his day job. And then his hobby is to go through the city directories and track the rise of groceries from 1920 forward. And so, like, you can go to Grosseteria.com, look up the city of Troy, and see where the grocery stores were in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
And how it changed over time. So I think he goes from 1920 to 2010.
Yeah.
And it's so, like, all the shifts in the way that we got food and food moved around. Another book I read recently is called, I have to look it up. I totally lost it.
You're about my age, aren't you? It's a senior moment.
It is.
Yes.
The History of Refrigeration, Frostbite, Nicola Twilley, The History of Refrigeration. It is so good.
Really?
Yeah.
The History of Refrigeration. It's like four pages? What's that?
Oh, my God.
No?
Ray. It's how refrigeration made us.
Oh, mm-hmm. I see. And how did it make us?
Look at where we are. Not very well.
Well, yeah. I mean, but there are advantages to it, obviously.
Yeah. We're just storehousing a lot of food.
You know, not for nothing. Maybe there's hope. Now, I won't say the name of the grocery store, but they're around. There are a lot of them around here. And they have one of these places have some tremendous bread. And there's this bread called When Pigs Fly. Have you ever?
Oh, yeah. I've had it.
And they have it regularly. And you can just go into your grocer if you're getting whatever, and you can get real bread.
Yeah.
They make a nice sourdough.
There's a bunch of good, even at the supermarket. There's even good bread.
Okay. Amy Halloran is our guest. We'll take a break. 800-348-2551. I think we're just getting into gear here. And if you want to call, feel free. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. You got a flower question, that's always in play as well. We'll be back. Fishy Takes a Walk. There's the Levin Brothers on Vox Pop. Next time I talk to Tony Levin, I got to ask him how they came up with that title.
I love it.
He and his brother titled that Fishy Takes a Walk. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Food Friday, and Amy Halloran is here. Amy, this thing that you gave me a piece of in the break is really fine. What is it?
I used to make this from the Betty Crocker cookbook. It's called a Swedish limpa bread, but whether it's really Swedish, who knows, because
right.
It was the Betty Crocker cookbook.
Yeah.
But I remember saving up my box tops, you know, and getting the red Betty Crocker cookbook.
Oh, yeah.
And I would make this around Christmas time. And it's
how long ago did you start making this?
I was 12,
so
I think.
20 years ago.
Yeah. 20 years ago, yep. And it's just you roll it out. You roll out a sweet dough, and then you put a cinnamon sugar, or I made a couple of other ones, and I put some currants in it. And then you twist it. You cut some holes into the ring of dough, and you twist it. And that's how you get the thing.
It's so delicious. It's so good.
Oh, well, and I used fresh yeast this time. I got
Hang on,
some.
Stop.
Yep.
Isn't all yeast fresh? I mean,
no.
All right, explain.
Okay. We pause for a little leavening.
Thank you, yes.
Intermission.
Not levity, but leavening.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So, fresh yeast is how yeast, when the Fleischmann's Company in 1870 patented yeast production. And through quite a long time, until you had dry yeast, I don't know when dry yeast in the little packet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So fresh yeast comes in a block, and it's perishable.
Like butter?
Kind of like butter. I meant to bring you the yeast, too, to show you. I wanted to show you the yeast.
All right.
Because it smells really yeasty.
I'll just imagine it.
Dense gray block, and you take some of it and you let it bloom with sugar and water or sugar and milk.
Bloom,
because you want to make sure the yeast gets a start.
And the yeast blooms, and what does it look like when it blooms? I'm sorry, I really don't know.
It looks like you could see these bubbles coming up.
Okay,
gets frothy.
Okay, gotcha.
Gets frothy.
Okay.
And then it just has a very different taste. When I make holiday breads, I get some fresh yeast because it's got more flavor to it, and it's fun.
When did they start making yeast that wasn't fresh?
That's what I don't know. But I know that the packets of yeast, so I could do it from cookbooks. When did the cookbooks start having, you know, one packet dried yeast?
Interesting.
At least, I'm going to look that up on the...
Are there any advantages to it, having a packet of yeast?
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's great. They're shelf stable, relatively. So,
well, how do they make it shelf stable?
I have no idea.
Chemicals?
No,
evil?
I don't think
anything?
So.
No?
I think it's drying it.
Okay.
They just worked out the technology to be able to dry it without killing it.
So this is something you'll make at the holiday time. What else are you baking?
So we've got the hermit cookies.
Is this a holiday favorite at your house?
Well, these are like in the style of the Fryhofer.
Yes.
So they have become a holiday favorite, but they're replacing the king-sized ginger snaps I used to make from the Good Housekeeping cookbook. Yep.
So this is, they look exactly like the Fryhofers from the old days.
Yeah.
Which they don't make anymore?
I don't think they do. But I don't know for sure because
anyway,
I haven't looked. But.
That requires some research. I think you talked about this years ago that you were going to try to do that.
Yeah, I got some help from the Placid Baker to try to figure out a recipe, and I think we nailed it.
You know, this occurs to me. My daughters, my wife, they're going to be starting the baking this weekend.
Yes.
And we have our favorites as well. But if you want to share yours, feel free. 800-348-2551 is the number. What's your favorite baking, whether it's cookies or... We love the magic cookie bars in our house.
Yeah, the layers.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are pretty great.
Coconut and everything else.
What else? What are some other Graff favorites?
Oh, gosh. I like them. I don't get them that often. From when I was a kid, those crinkle, they're like, I don't know what they're even called. They're chocolate cookies, and they look sort of like a
brownie.
Relief map of the world, but part of it is white. They powder part of the top. They're crinkly.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
I think I do.
I don't describe things very well for someone who's in radio. I'll tell you what, let's take a call. 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran is our guest, and it's Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan. Happy holidays.
Hello, Ray. Hello, Amy. What a joy to speak with you both. So I can wish you all a happy, happy, happy holidays.
You too.
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'll share it with my family. So speaking of sharing things with my family, I'm thinking I'm going to challenge myself to do some cookies or you know, the loaf breads like the way you make the hermit cookies.
Yep.
Which I remember tasting at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
Oh, you brought them to farmer's market. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I even got to meet Kathy Sheehan from the Harcourt Museum. Remember that?
Yep.
It was really cool.
I do.
Well, here's how you can help me. I hope. I know you can. I want to do some cookies or breads, like I said, that are reminiscent of our youth. I was thinking like molasses cookies my mom used to make.
A nice soft one.
Yeah.
Mm. And what else, what were you about to say, Joan?
Oh, I think you mentioned ginger snaps or something like that. And
yep.
I love anything with ginger.
Yeah.
So some ideas of how to make it edible and yummy.
Edible. Okay. That's a good start.
Well, a good recipe, you know, especially... If you aren't cooking a recipe over and over and over again, it's nice to look at the cookbook or at the recipe and make sure you have it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty happy that I have either recipes that I wrote down and I can dig. There's this other holiday cookie recipe that was bugging me. I couldn't remember which cookbook it was from.
Yeah.
And I found some kind of internet cookbook archive that had Edith's sugar cookies.
Ah.
And it's because I could remember getting it from the Troy Public Library. I remembered right where I got it from, you know.
Uh-huh.
But you want to know about ginger snaps. So ginger snaps and molasses cookies. Do you have cookbooks that you love, Joan, or you're hunting for new recipes?
I'm trying to remember who has our copy, the family copy of the old Red Betty Crocker.
Mm. Well, this is...
I think that's where my mom got most of her recipes.
Well, you can look that up online. If you can remember, like my Good Housekeeping ginger snap was called King Size Ginger Snap. So if you put that in quotes, you can find that recipe. And you might have to skirt around, you know, sponsored recipes and stuff like that. But if you hunt around, I mean, King Arthur has some delicious recipes. I always trust them. Take a look at the pictures and see if they are aiming for the texture that you like, and I think you can't go wrong.
Joan, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you, Joan.
800-348-2551 is our number, and Amy Halloran joins us. You know, when you were in Ann Arbor and going through this cookbook archive, did they have any regional cookbooks?
Oh, yeah.
Did you notice any sort of stylistic differences between all the research you've done on cookbooks around here and the bakeries in Troy as well? I mean...
Well, that archive is national.
Right.
But looking
at some of the other areas.
There's recipes that are definitely regional and eras, you know, like slice of life. I can't think of anything now.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry to put you. I'm like Mike Wallace. I'm putting you on the spot here. All right, let's go to North Adams and get Amy off the hook. Diane, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about millet.
What about millet? Yeah.
People have tried to convince me that I need to add more grains to my life. So, okay. I bought this bag of millet, and it looks like... looks like couscous.
Yeah. It looks like birdseed because it is birdseed. I mean, they use it in birdseed. So, I mean, when you can do a few different things with millet. There's a nice candy you can make where you pop millet and then put it with like a sugar syrup and then crack it. So kind of like a millet brittle. You can also... Yeah, that's a neat one. You can also boil the millet and add it to bread doughs. And then you have, you know, you just cook it up like a grain. And because it is a grain.
Okay.
And
because it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if you want to use it for flour, you should use millet flour and use it with a bunch of other stuff.
Ah.
Not on its own.
Do you ever use millet, Amy?
I've used it. I use it mostly to, like, as a whole grain to cook with. You know, like, if I need something really, really fast because it cooks up in about 10 minutes, I'll make millet and red lentils for dinner.
So, Diane, they're making you have more grain, huh? And you went with the millet.
Well, yeah.
I feel your pain.
I may have a second thought about that.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought I might put it in the food processor and grind it into flour.
Well, it's going to be really gritty because the food processor is not going to break it down so much. And to be fine enough to be a real flour, I'd really recommend using it whole and cooked. And supplement, you know, throw it into part, you know, a quarter cup or a half cup into a loaf of banana bread. There you go.
You know, Diane.
But once it's cooked.
Thanks for the call and good luck. Let us know next time Amy's on if you worked anything out. Thank you for the call. You don't look that enthused by the millet. I got to be honest. I'm trying to read the room here.
Yeah, you know, I have a real affinity for grains that I can picture growing.
Yeah.
And also that I really, really like the taste of.
Like, so you don't like millet that much.
I love wheat.
And so millet isn't birdseed?
Well, it's in birdseed. But
really? What about suet? Right, that's in birdseed too.
That's in birdseed too, and it's also in your mincemeat and your all those British puddings and
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bess writes in: can all-purpose flour replace gluten-free flour in most baking recipes?
I wonder.
That's a reverse of what we usually get.
I know.
Can all-purpose flour replace gluten-free flour?
I really think when people are writing for gluten-free recipes, they're specifying gluten-free flour and often specific gluten-free flours because there are so many ingredients. A gluten-free flour isn't just like a ground-up wheat grain. It's usually tapioca and rice and several different things to try to make it happen. And they're really specific to you. So I would be cautious.
You could always try it.
You could try it, but you know, if you don't bake very often and then you decide to improvise, you're going to get disappointed. You're going to have all kinds of shameful feelings about the kitchen.
You're not going to go back.
So, you know, do yourself a I'm a big improviser in the kitchen, but I think I want people to have success. So I think that they should follow recipes.
Shame. You know what? Don't have any shameful feelings. Follow the recipes, please, for Amy's sake. The number, shameful feelings. The number here is 800-348-2551. If you'd like to share your shameful feelings with Amy Halloran, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's go to Gloversville. Arthur, you're on.
Hey, how are you today?
Welcome.
Thank you, Ray. I love your show. I love your cooking shows.
Thank you.
When I was in second grade, and that's going back because I'm 73 years old.
Whoa.
A girl brought in these conical cookies called krumkaka.
Right.
And I was dazzled by them.
Conical. So.
And I married a girl whose mother was Norwegian. And she made krumkaka and had the iron.
Wow.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
So tell us, do you know about these, Amy?
I can sort of picture them. Are they like a sugar cookie, but they're rolled into on a cone?
Yes, it's a flat cookie. You put the batter in the iron, squeeze it, turn it over, and then they come out soft, and I roll them up, and I put them in a toilet paper roll. As a cone, and that's the mold that holds them.
And do you put any decorations on them?
The iron has fluting in it. So when they come out, they have a design on them.
You know, when I was in Wisconsin, I went to a Sons of Norway breakfast, which was probably made by the Sons and Daughters of Norway.
Okay,
but it was called
fair enough.
Sons of Norway breakfast. And I'm trying to picture whether I had those, but they're not jumping out. I remember I had a lot of delicious food.
That sounds great, though, Arthur. That sounds
awesome. Yeah, it sounds beautiful.
If you ever get a chance, send a picture. Do you still make them?
They're spiced with cardamom.
I was going to say, that's it. That's the flavor. I love cardamom.
That's awesome. Well, I tell you what, you got to try that one, Amy, in 26.
Okay, I will.
Now, can you use millet for that at all, or no?
Thanks, Arthur.
All right, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Tim is in Wilbraham. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Hey, pretty good. Out here playing in the rain.
Oh, it's lovely, isn't it?
Don't get blown over.
Hey, quick question. When I was a kid, and I'm going to date myself, going back 40 or so years, used to have lemon and cherry coolers.
Oh, yeah.
They're a little cookie with powder on it.
Love them.
I can picture the bag.
Sunshine used to make them, I think.
Right?
Way back when.
Yep.
Yeah. So I've been trying to find some, and I'm at a loss for many years now.
Come to think of it, Tim, I haven't seen them in years either. They were a go-to. I love those.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you remember those?
I do. I remember it was a bag. You could get a ginger snap in a bag that way, too, right?
Right.
Sometimes it was a box.
I remember the sunshine boxes.
The box. No, yeah. I'm remembering.
Yeah. And they were little. They were about the diameter of a quarter. Mm-hmm. And they were powdered sugar on them.
Yep.
And they were so good. You could eat them by the handful.
Well, that I'll do a little research, yeah, and I'll see if I can come up with a recipe that mirrors them.
For the next time?
For the next time.
You know what, Tim? Now you've got something, because she'll find this. This woman is in books all the time, and it's probably in Betty Crocker or something, right?
Something. But cool. Also, I'll find out, like, who made them, why they stopped making them, why they are depriving all of us of this deep time tunnel.
Maybe somebody still does. You never know.
Yeah.
Tim, great call.
I was kind of wondering. Someone somewhere might have some.
I think so.
Maybe somebody will call in, but thank you. If not, Amy is on the case for 26. Thank you for the call. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Oh, yeah. Lemon coolers. They were... Oh, yeah. All right, we'll be back. Oh, a little inside baseball here. Every time Amy's on, she says, I'm baking. And I say, you don't have to. You just come, you be Amy, and it's a great show. She makes stuff, and I just tried these white powdered things, and they're like, I don't know what they are, but they have sort of the mouthfeel of the old pecan sandees, but they have powdered sugar on them.
They are Viennese crescents.
They're so good.
And I make those cookies because a friend of mine taught me to make them many years ago.
10
right?
years ago.
10, yeah. 30,
okay,
40.
Whatever. Yeah, right. Who's counting?
But they're great. They're just butter, walnuts, flour, a little bit of sugar. And then the key is to dust them heavily in powdered sugar.
Yeah.
And they are, yeah.
That's a winner. Yep. That's definitely a winner. This email from Deb. A recent guest on the show spoke about how wheat grown in the U.S. is sprayed with chemicals to hinder weeds. Are there any flowers you'd recommend that are grown without chemicals? Is that true, first of all?
Well, I mean, conventional agricultural production, it relies on sprays. Organic agricultural production limits what you can spray on food,
right,
spray on growing plants. So I would say find a good organic flour mill. There are a number of them in the Northeast. There's one that I really adore called Farmer Ground Flour, and their flour is top of the crop to me.
Okay. This email from Sandra. I think this is the cookie Ray was talking about, chocolate crinkles. I think, Sandy, you're right, because somebody else also wrote in their chocolate crinkles. King Arthur has a recipe.
Uh-huh.
Fry Offers used to sell an unsliced bread to use for stuffing. My sister and I had the chore of pulling it apart to let it go stale overnight. When I was in third grade, we got a tour of their factory. Looking down a hole at their mixer was scary. Recently, the best bread I've had was a mixture of whole wheat and einkorn.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. I just love hearing about classes that went to Fryhoffers. That's so fun. And also picturing kids pulling apart the bread, the dreaded chore of making the stuffing.
Really? You don't just make stuffing out of a bag?
Ray.
You're glaring at me.
Don't you know me by now?
I'm not much of a cook. I'm sure that... let's just go to Utica. Lauren, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi,
this season I am going to try to recreate my granny's famous butter tart, which I have fond memories of growing up in Canada, but I find them very hard to find in the United States, and I think it's like a classic sort of pecan pie filling, and instead of pecans, you have raisins.
Ah, I'm looking...
Have you heard of butter tart?
I have heard of them through a baker friend of mine, Dawn Woodward, in Toronto. So she makes these butter tarts that look so rich and, you know, delectable. As I recall, it sort of has a candy-ish, buttery filling and a shortbread on the bottom or a pie crust. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're not
I have pie crust.
Uh-huh. And I don't know, I've never made them. that's just not my my compass doesn't go toward that food in particular.
Really?
No. Just because, you know, I'm a very much an echo person, and I've never really had them.
Okay.
But I think if you look at look for some recipes have you looked for recipes and not been able to find them?
I'm going to dig out one I have from Canada Living, so I'm thinking that might be a good place to start.
Yeah.
If I were to take a shortcut, how do you feel about store-bought pastry dough as opposed to homemade?
Oh, okay. That's a grand question, Lauren.
So, I mean, I don't like it, but I have, but that's because I've grown wheat in my yard in Troy. I'm not the right person to ask about.
Lauren, full disclosure, she's nuts. All right, just put it out there.
But I have heard that I have read about what is the best store-bought crust, and there is one that's very good. We're not going to name names.
Thank you for not naming names.
We are going to send you to the internet and say, you ask the internet gods, what is the best store-bought crust? And you do it. If you want to do that, that's fine.
Okay. I mean, if
because
you're
getting there, right?
You're getting to the end of the process. And if you don't have that much time, maybe you can't grow your own wheat in the backyard. I
mean, you'll end up like me, the little red hen. Nobody wants to mill it.
Oh.
Not millet.
Hey,
not
that's
millet,
funny.
But millet.
All right, Lauren, you want to follow up at all?
No, thank you very much.
Hey,
have
happy
fun.
Holidays.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for calling. 800-348-2551. The one and only Amy Halloran is with us today. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll get back to the emails in a little bit. For now, we go to Richard in Albany. Richard, you're on. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Ray. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. It's been a really great show because it's like all the back in the 70s when, you know, my sister would make that tea ring that you were talking about earlier.
Uh-huh.
But I follow Betty Crocker, and I use recipes as guides.
Yep. Oh, I do, too. I'm just advocating, if holiday bakers, right? Like, if you're just stepping up to bat.
Yeah. Follow the rules.
Follow the rules. Listen to the recipe testers.
All right, Richard, what else?
But what I found with the peanut butter cookies, that instead of just creaming my sugar and butter together, I whip them until they're frothy.
Ooh.
And then I add my dry ingredients, and that peanut butter cookie comes out just so outstanding. I mean, I bring them to parties, and I'm, you know, suddenly the hero.
There's nothing better than a fine peanut butter cookie.
I know. And
nothing.
And this is the recipe from the Betty Crocker cookbook, or what recipe?
I use that as my guide.
Okay.
And yesterday, I want to say I kicked it up a notch because I added to my sugar, I added ground ginger and cinnamon.
Oh, yeah.
That'll work.
Oh,
so
yeah.
When I rolled them out and gave them that nice sugar coating before I patted them down, and that ginger and cinnamon that was an out of the ballpark for me.
Amazing.
Do you ever use, Richard, part smooth peanut butter and part crunchy?
I've tried doing the crunchy peanut butter on the peanut butter cookies, and what happens for me is they have a tendency when I'm trying to roll them into that original ball is they just fall apart
they
and
break
I can't
up.
Get them formed.
Yeah. Amy's nodding
I'm
here.
I'm wagging my head.
Oh, really?
Wagging my head.
Do you ever make peanut butter cookies?
You know, I don't love them, but I have a good friend who adores them.
You don't
so
love them.
Whenever I hear peanut butter cookie recipes discussed, I'm thinking of being in her kitchen and watching her bake them.
Okay.
So I'm going to pass on this this froth your butter and peanut butter for
I
the
like
peanut
it.
Butter cookies for her.
Richard,
yeah.
thank you very much for this call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's see, to Jonesville we go. Barbara, where's Jonesville? I don't know about this one. I've heard of Jonestown.
It's northern Clifton Park.
Ah, okay, so it's not far.
It's just the northern, it's just below Round Lake.
Okay, and you could drink the Kool-Aid there, so it's fine, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
The gentleman that was talking about the cookie that had the iron, that had the pattern on it.
The crumb cracker?
Yes, the crumb cracker. I have one of those, and I learned how to make the cookie from a Norwegian woman. And I went to her house, and she did everything by weight and in grams. So I had to figure out how to convert that. And so I, you know, it's 2 eggs, 1/4 pound of butter, and 4 ounces of sugar, and a cup of flour, a tablespoon of sherry, brandy, or cognac.
Of course.
You mix that together, and you put a teaspoon on the hot iron, close it down, 15 seconds each side, take it off, put it around a broomstick. There's your cookie.
Around a
broomstick.
I don't
put it in a toilet paper roll.
That's so cool.
I have a little piece of a broomstick, and I don't fill them. Some people fill them or put sugar on them. They're so rich that I just eat them the way they are and hand them out. But the other recipe I have is called a New Year's cookie. And that one has a little note on it that says, "Do not put molds in the oven, dummy."
Okay.
They're either an aluminum base or a wooden base, and they're cut out so that what you do is you put the dough on it and roll it on that thing
and
on
take
that
it off.
Mold.
Yeah,
and take the mold off. Yes, that's why it says don't put them in the oven. But that one is 2 pounds of butter, 2 pounds of confectioner sugar, 18 cups of flour.
Wow.
So that,
there's
so
a, that, I, I'm
and
hoping
a pinch of
a lot of people pinch of helped
salt.
Out with that recipe.
A lot of people helped out, you
I'm
hope?
I'm hoping.
Yeah. You do that all by yourself, Barbara?
No.
No.
I learned it from my mother-in-law, and then when I make it, I just know that it's either an all morning or all afternoon process.
That's beautiful.
That's great.
And you have to let them age. They need to age about a month. So that's why they're called New Year's cookies.
Wow.
Because you're supposed to make them at Thanksgiving
a
and
month?
Let them.
Wow.
They don't go stale?
I'm going to look these up.
No, you
that
put them in.
Fun.
You put them in an airtight container, and you can eat them 6 months later.
That is crazy. Well, thank you for that one, Barbara, and happy holidays to you. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Cindy in West Springfield. Hello, Cindy.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice to hear you guys. Love it.
Great to have you here.
I was curious, whatever happened, since you're such a good mystery person, whatever happened to those wonderful famous chocolate wafers that we would make our icebox cake with? My father even had them as a child. We have had them for birthdays and other events forever, and now they stopped making them.
I wonder why they did
that. What are we supposed to do?
What are we supposed to do? So, yeah, Nabisco discontinued them in 2023. God only knows
why. I know.
Why.
I bought a whole bunch at that time.
There, you know,
stocked up on them, but
people sometimes bake their own. But there are a few substitutes. There's like, Maria cookies that are sold all over the world in tubes.
Oh yeah,
and there's
Maria.
So, Maria, yeah. I think you really have to hunt, and sometimes. I wonder if they tuck them into the baking aisle itself rather than the cookie aisle.
Oh, I'll look
aisle.
There.
Take a look.
Yep.
Now,
yeah, and you can make something.
I don't remember who was on, but we did a baking show a month or two ago, and this came up, Cindy. And whoever the guest was said, yeah, you know, you can substitute just the wafers from Oreos.
Yeah.
You know, just take them apart.
I guess you could.
Or
it's not quite the same, though. I mean, those old chocolate wafers were
the
best.
They were so good.
Yeah.
And they were thin. They were really nice.
Yep.
Maybe they'll bring them back. It hasn't been that long.
Why would they
maybe
get
rid of them? Enough people complain.
Yes.
There's probably petitions. Yeah.
Nabisco used to be around here, right?
Oh, geez, Ray.
Oh, here we go. We only have a few minutes left. Cindy, I'm sorry I did that.
Well,
but
thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Thank you so much. I was just curious if you knew anything more, but I'm going to look for the other ones.
All right, get ready for this little chat about old Nabisco. Here we go. Thank you.
So, down where Capital Rep is now was one of the first Nabisco, which was another version of the New York Biscuit Company.
Yeah.
So in the basement of Capital Rep, there are little remnants of the bakeries. But the whole history of it, Ray, is I have to write something.
Why don't you do it?
Big about it, because, I mean, I don't know, big, 10 pages or whatever. It's so fun. The original cracker company that was the Nabisco that was here. Nabisco was a 10 different cracker companies from around the United States that got together. And but back in 1862, I believe, on the top of the when St. Joseph Church moved from, what's the street? Is that the theater's on? What's the street that Cap Rep is on? Is that Pearl?
Downtown in Albany.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Troy. Nope. Yeah, I think it's South Pearl, right?
Yeah.
Or is it North Pearl?
It's North Pearl. Yeah. So there was, in an old church, they turned it into a bakery. And then there was a huge, and they had all this baking equipment that they had imported from England.
Yeah.
And England had started mechanizing tea biscuits. They called them biscuits, but they were cookies
right.
for tea. And
quaint.
So they imported all this stuff. And then there was a big fire, maybe 1873, but I forget the year. And the whole biscuit company burnt up. There's such a good article. There's a good bunch of articles talking about the fire. There were 300 people working at that bakery when it burned
down.
Were
they okay?
Nobody got hurt. It was
good.
Yeah.
How many biscuits were injured?
No biscuits were injured in the telling of this story.
You know what? I got to tell you, this is radio and you can't see this, but Amy lit up like the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree when the word Nabisco came up. So perhaps we're almost out of time. We save that one for another extended discourse.
And maybe before the end of the year, I'll whip up a Albany Nabisco zine. And I'll bring it in.
Oh, I like it.
Right?
All right. This one from Elizabeth. Loving the conversation. I'm on a journey to explore my own heritage through baking. And I'm curious if you know any Eastern European bakeries in our area. And if not locally, any that you've come across elsewhere that you'd recommend.
So I'm pretty sure there is a Polish bakery in Syracuse.
Yeah, I'm guessing Central New York is probably your best bet.
You could go to, there's a couple of Polish stores around here, Polish Ukrainian stores over in Latham, they have some stuff, but like for a bakery, I'm pretty sure, I can't remember if it was Utica or.
Utica was big. A lot of Germans and Poles and a lot of people there.
Yep.
All right.
But
well,
good luck.
We have so many emails and we're almost out of time. So I just don't know what to do. Here's one from Gray. Can I sub King Arthur SR for regular in applesauce bread if I leave out the baking powder and soda?
Should be able to, yes. And maybe the salt. I don't know if it has salt.
Julie writes in, Maria cookies can be found in the international aisle near the Spanish food section.
Okay.
All right. I guess that's about all we have time. All right, Amy Halloran. Happy holidays to you, my friend.
Oh,
it's
happy
been fun.
New Year, Ray.
It's been a weird year, not going to lie.
No.
This has been the kind of an odd one.
The rug ripped right out from under us, but we're still here.
Can we make it any weirder next year? I don't know. But we'll see you several times next year, and so have a great holiday.
You too, Ray. Thanks very much.
Support comes from 8th Step, presenting Sing Solstice with Magpie, Kim Harris and Joe Bruschak. Also, Reggie Harris by video at Proctor's December 21st, 7:30 p.m. 8th. Bite my own lip. This is a new one, Zach. I'm bleeding. At Proctor's December 21st, 7:30 p.m. 8thstep.com or Proctor's box office for tickets. I swear I did not drink at the company party at all. I had a Dr. Pepper. A River Valley Co-op in Northampton at East Hampton, supporting local farmers and featuring local produce, dairy, meat, and cheese, rivervalley.coop. And the Meat Hook, Warren Street. Where are you going? We're not done yet. Don't leave. And the Meat Hook, Warren Street, Hudson, New York, a whole animal butcher shop featuring grass-fed, pasture-raised meats direct from New York State farmers, open daily from 10 till 6, themeathook.com for more information. You can tell how much fun Amy Halloran had because she's ready to get the heck out of Dodge. All right, you can go. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King screened the calls. Thanks, all. We'll see you Monday at 2 for Medical Monday.